This is the news, according to me. There will not be any intro music today. As most of you have heard, I'm sure by now that Rush Limbaugh has passed away. We knew this day was coming. But I don't think, at least any sensible people, were looking forward to this day. First of all, I want to apologize for the show being so late this evening and some other things that have come up throughout the day. I posted the earlier show this morning before I found out about the news, and I didn't mention anything about it because of that, but the show didn't get posted until later in the day. It was almost 4 o'clock, I believe, 4 or 5 o'clock probably, before I got the show posted online. And just been a crazy busy day. And the only thing, I did listen to Rush's show today, and just listened to the things that, that was kind of a tribute to some of his past broadcasts, and just really going to miss the guy. One of the things, I just want to honor him at the beginning of this, and I also want to honor him by continuing to move on, because he's a person who deserves honor and respect. Regardless of what some people on the left say about him and what some people believe about him, he was an incredibly, incredibly kind man in terms of, he was very respectful to people who called in on the phone, even people who disagreed with him. He was very good at, I guess the word that comes to mind is accommodating. He was just so accommodating to anybody and grateful for anyone who called in. And people would call in and wait for hours because everybody wanted to talk to this guy. And he just acted like he was, that he was only there for them. That one person who called in, that he was so grateful for. And I've always, he didn't take any caller for granted, I guess is the word. Welcomed them onto the show as if they were the most important guest in the world. And interestingly enough, he very rarely had, you know, he didn't do interviews. He very rarely had other people on the show. And it was commentary and his opinions and his, well, you know, does it remind you of anybody else's show? Now, I'm not saying I'm on the level of Rush Limbaugh. What I'm saying is his show has inspired so many other people to do what he's doing, what he was doing. He paved the way. He really opened up for this country, I believe, a daily education, as he would call it. The Excellence in Broadcasting Network and his you would say his institute for conservative studies, you never graduate because the learning never stops. And the learning will not stop. The legacy that he has is that he has passed on his passion for truth and liberty to so many other people. I, for one, have learned so much from him, and I'm very grateful for that. Not just in terms of information, but even more so in the regard to, with regard to character. He was a very respectful individual, a very appreciative, especially in his later years. He was a little bit of a bloviator and a little bit verbose, kind of cocky in his younger years. And that's to be expected. Who isn't? He was only 12 years older than me. And I think in the last 10, 15 years, he really developed, I think, his ability to communicate with people and to communicate his message. And I guess one of the biggest things I remember of him in the last few years, especially during the Trump years, he didn't get involved in promoting a candidate prior to the end of the primary. He was always very careful about that. He didn't want to affect the outcome of the primary. If he would have come out and endorsed a candidate, I think it could very easily have changed the outcome of the primary. He didn't want to do that. He didn't want to have that kind of, he didn't want to tell people what to think. He wanted to teach people how to think. Very big difference there. Something that our left-wing politicians, even our right-wing politicians and some news media organizations could learn from, because they feel like they need to tell us what we need to think about. So it just, the one thing that I noticed the most in the last four years of the Trump administration was that when things would seem like they were just going down the tubes, like something bad would happen, and it was just like, oh, this is terrible. This is, what's going to happen here? How can Trump possibly recover from this? Or how can we possibly move on as a party or a group of independence-loving, freedom-loving, conservative-believing individuals? And he would have a way. He would find a way to pull out the positivity and buoy people up. He just had a way of bringing about a positive message when it seemed like all hope was lost. And I think that stuck with me more than ever in the last couple of years. And he would have kids on his program once in a while. Some kid would call in and talk about the books, Revere series that he did. And his little history books, they were like directed towards kids, but I think a lot of adults could learn a lot from them. And just how his ability to speak with little kids, as well as some of the most brilliant minds, that says a lot about who he is as a communicator and as a human being. Understanding people and life and what, I think he understood really what people's basic issues are, what people's basic problems are. What, at the core of who we are, and also what motivates us, what gives us the ability to move forward when we would otherwise give up. He was good at that. I think he understood that. His brother is a minister, a pastor. He's written several books. And I know that Rush had a very deep faith. Wouldn't talk about it much. Talked about it just a few times. But it was, you know, he was, I think he was just very humble in that respect, that he didn't want to parade that around or showboat that part of him. I've just learned today that I guess a lot of things he did in his community, wherever he lived and the people around him, understood very well that he was an extremely generous individual. And he would not typically, if he could get away with it, he would not donate or help out charities and let people know where the money came from. Now, there were some things he did, the Betsy Ross Foundation or the Betsy Ross flag thing that he did. I can't remember where the money went for that, but yeah, that was a thing where he, after the whole Nike thing with the Betsy Ross flag on their tennis shoes, and he turned that around and turned it into a huge fundraiser, still going on to this day. And of course, there was a lot of people who tried to copy it and hack into the whole process and make money off of creating counterfeit products. And they, of course, they did that. But So I just want to pay my respects to Rush and the effect just the effect that he's had on my life, but the effect that he's had on my thinking and my ability to understand liberty. And the founding, what the founding was about, what the conservative movement is about and why it's important and why the founders established the country that they did. Now, at the same time, there's one other individual that is still alive today, and I want to also just put this out there that Ron Paul actually helped me understand a lot about the sovereignty of the individual and what true individual liberty is. Had a huge effect, and I think that that Rush Limbaugh was the primer that helped me to keep my head wrapped around the ideas, and then Ron Paul just kind of knocked it home. Now, I don't agree with everything that Ron Paul said, or all the things he believes, in terms of foreign policy and just on policy issues, some policy issues. But for the most part, he has it down on economic things. He understands completely what's going on. And also on issues of morality and how the government should respond and be a part of morality and what is moral and how the government's response should be to that, as well as what the Constitution says about, well, just what the Constitution says. He's a constitutional guy, and what the Constitution says about liberty and understanding those things and our constitutional rights. So those are the two men, Rush Limbaugh and Ron Paul. As I got to know more about Rush in the last few years, I've listened to him more probably in the last few years than I did before. Originally, when he first came out, I could not get him on the radio. I think he was on AM radio back in the 90s in this area, and I didn't really have a station I could listen to him on. I didn't really have, you know, the internet wasn't around yet as far as being able to, you know, have radio stations that covered it, or that I could, you know, had fast enough internet even that a radio station would come through. Streaming audio wasn't even, that was kind of a new thing in the 90s, early 90s. Well, by the time, you know, started listening to his broadcasts and stuff in the late 90s, and then the internet, of course, came into being, and it was, and podcasts and all that kind of stuff started happening. So, just learned a lot, though, in the last 10 years or so, has really been interesting to understand more about his principles and what he believed and how his philosophy of government was formulated, and learned a lot, more than a lot, learned an awful lot from him. And so I just want to say that I'm going to miss the voice on the right, the talent that was on loan from God that has now been returned. So, having said all of that, I want to move on. And with reverence, I want to talk about some things that have happened today in the news. And yeah, so we'll just go there. I want to be, I'm going to skim through some of the headlines that are on Parler right now. I've been listening to a little bit of news today as much as I could, and kind of going to try to at least discuss a few things. It's going to be a fairly short show today, but I just want to discuss a few things that have been happening. One of the things that's in the news, and of course I believe it's Miss Jackson Lee, I believe, is who is behind most of it at this point. They're holding a hearing on slavery reparations now. This is, of course, they're going to overwhelm the system. This is what they do. This is what the left. This is right out of the playbook from Rules for Radicals. So they will have gun control legislation. They will have reparations for slavery's descendants of slaves. You could say that we are all descendants of slaves, but I'm sure I would get reprimanded for saying that. There is still a slave trade today, not in this country, not, they call it human trafficking now. That's different. That's a different kind of slave trade. But it still is. However, there are places in the world that have slaves, workers that are very similar to what we had here in this country a couple hundred years ago. And so the question I have now, this is the question. This is where it gets down to some conservative principles. How would you, if your family never owned slaves, if you've descended from a group of people, family line never owned slaves, if you had family who died freeing the slaves, how would you feel about having the government require you to pay out money to pay for reparations This is going to be a huge spending bill, and it's not going to be a one-time thing, folks. I'll guarantee you, whatever they're going to have a commission and make some decisions. And I guarantee you, this is not going to be a one-time payment. This is going to go on for a long time. It's going to be, now, here's the other question. So they're going to take our tax money to do this. And how many of you out there in this country have owned slaves? You should pay for it. How many out there of you have in this country been slaves? Then those people should pay you directly. If you haven't owned slaves and you haven't been a slave, you should be excluded. That's my opinion. I don't think it's fair for someone who has not owned slaves, whose family has not owned slaves, to pay out reparations to a family who has not experienced slavery, who has questionably not even have come from a family of slaves. And how do you prove that? How do you figure that out and be fair about it? Because you're going to miss somebody, and somebody's going to cheat the system. But I guarantee you this is going to be a huge spending bill, and it's going to become an entitlement program. Forever. It will never end. Never. Just try to stop that one. If you think it'd be tough to cut welfare, or to cut Medicare, that's impossible. Once people get on a program like that, they depend on it. They become dependent of it. Folks, there were some interesting things that happened back when the welfare system was being kicked in. And there were some interesting comments by the Democrats who put it into place. Go back and read what LBJ said about this stuff. The guy was a racist. Total racist, in my opinion. More so than Uncle Joe, who made some comments at the town hall that are unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I'm not even taking them out of context. It's just unbelievable that he gets away with that stuff. Trump could never have said that. And just very demeaning and condescending towards people of color and minorities. Excuse me. The yeah. Mitch McConnell is in some hot water. The folks back home in Kentucky are pretty much saying that he is he needs to resign from the minority leader, whatever he is. He, I believe it's, let me see if I can find it here. I'm looking for it, can't find it anywhere. There's two people that are really in hot water right now. Now, one of them is Mitch McConnell, because of the comments that he made after the impeachment trial was over. Folks back home in the Republican Party are basically saying he should resign, and they're calling for other senators basically to ask for that. He's probably going to be censored as well from the home state. This is not a good sign for Mitch. Now, I agree. I think Mitch needs to resign completely. He's been there too long. Now, the problem with him resigning, and this is where we run into an issue. I think that the state then has the opportunity to put someone in, and at the moment they would probably put in. I think he's from Kentucky, yeah. And at the moment they would probably put him in or replace him with a Democrat, which would be bad. So that's not a good plan. However, you have to wonder whether it would make any difference or not. Because at the moment, he is so compromised by the fact that he was, you know, he wants to maintain some kind of power as the minority leader. Now, if they had a brand new Senate leader in there, if Schumer wasn't the guy who's been in politics and in Washington for decades, he knows what he's doing as well with regard to how to play the game. If they had some newbie in there that didn't know what he was doing, you know, Mitch might be able to play ball and maybe actually be able to do something. Right now, the Democrats are playing Mitch like a fiddle. They know that Mitch is power hungry and a little bit blind, that he has that he thinks somehow that the Republican administration is going, or the establishment is going to come back and things are going to be like they were before. That ain't going to happen. That is not going to happen. And if he thinks it is, then he's not talking to people back home at all. People are mad. And they're going to, I'll guarantee you, gas prices are already up from last year. This time last year, gas prices were almost 10 cents lower as a national average. And at the moment, just compared to a few months ago, gas prices have risen like 20-some cents. And people still aren't driving that much right now. So we're in a really interesting time at the moment. Keep in mind, if the economy starts to come out and we start to have a fuel flow again, the price of gas will go up. It always does. In this area where I'm from, we saw gas down to, well, in fact, there was one time gas did hit 99 cents a gallon for a little bit. We had gas just over a dollar a gallon for a little while. And then it went back up again, and now it's up, I think right now it's up at 240 something, or so, 230 or 240, something like that. And that hits people in the pocket but pretty hard, especially if you have any kind of commute to do. That strikes people pretty quickly if you have a commute to do. And like my wife drives an hour each way to work, an hour there, an hour back. Now, she's been working at home a lot, but still, she has to drive every day, or if she drives a couple days a week, a few days a week to work. And that starts to add up if you have a decent vehicle. I mean, you can't just buy a little piddly car that gets, you know, 45 miles a gallon, because thing's probably going to weigh about 200 pounds and you're going to be bouncing down the road for an hour. See how refreshed you feel when you get there. You will not be refreshed. Speaking of another person who might get impeached, this whole Kamala Harris thing is also being tossed around. This would be a... Now, if the Republicans take back the House and Republicans take back the Senate with a large enough majority that they can actually do something with it, I just don't see it happening. I don't... Kamala, they're supposedly going to impeach Kamala if the House comes back. Now, by the year 2022, Kamala will be the president if everything goes as she plans. Again, Joe is on a plateau right now. In other words, I've noticed if you watch him and the way he walks right now, there are some neurological stuff. There's some neurological stuff going on with him. And he's starting to shuffle more. This is not a good sign. And what happens with people as they degrade, you can go online, you can find analysis of this kind of thing all over the place, not just of Joe, but of people in general and how they start to diminish in older years. And what happens is they usually will make a decline, they'll kind of level off, sometimes improve a little bit, and then they'll kind of hang there a little bit, and then they kind of drop down again, and there's usually another decline that's noticeable, and then there's some time where they don't decline at all, and there's another decline. So it kind of goes down in steps like that. And sometimes, like I said, sometimes it even comes back a little bit, but it'll never come back to the point where it was. In other words, if you're on a level 8 and you go down to a 6, you may come back to a 7 or a 7 point, or maybe even up to an 8, but you're not going to go beyond that again. Probably not. And of course, there's medication that you can take that helps to keep things that you can kind of use to juice people up, so to speak. Dietary issues, dietary things that can happen, exercise, all kinds of things that you can help to kind of, that you can use to kind of help stave off some of those issues. However, most people stop following those kinds of guidelines unless they have someone there to care for them, to keep them going through that. And sometimes those things actually will wear a person out more. So there's one of two ways it can go. One, it can prolong things and make things better for a while. The other way is that it can actually cause those steps, that when they go down, the noticeable changes that get bad, downturns are much sharper and happen much more drastically, I guess, and more permanently. So there is all that stuff going on, and I just don't think that I think Biden's going to make it through the first 100 days. And then we're going to start seeing him talk about things that are not so great. So it'd be interesting to see how that unfolds. But I guarantee you before 2022, Joe Biden's not going to be the president by 2022. I just guarantee you that. So it'll be interesting to see how that all pans out. Now, Trump has made some interesting statements recently, and I think that's critical. I think that, well, first off, he's come out against him. He's put some pretty scathing remarks against Mitch McConnell, and as well as said some things about how they're, you know, he's in this game. He's not leaving politics. Basically, he's going to be involved. He's seen the game. He's seen how it's played. And now he has a chance to not be distracted by the daily activities of everything the responsibilities and the pomp and circumstance and everything that goes along with being the president. He has time now to put together a coalition and a plan of basically just a plan of attack. It's just, it's not, you know, in a political sense, it's not, it will be a coming into office running instead of, I kind of felt like when he first got elected and he got into the office and I think he had some grandiose ideas of how this was going to work. I think he thought that the Democrats would come around, he could make deals with them, that they would work with him. But they had so vilified him. Before he even stepped into office, he was such a villain to them that if they were seen as being friendly with him or working out any kind of deal with him, that it would be a political death for themselves, because they had already made him out to be such a villain that if they were seen as being friendly with him, well, now I'm friends with a villain. I'm friends with a monster. And they couldn't have that. So they had to double down on all that stuff for years, and there was just no working with him. And I don't think he expected that. I really think he was expecting to be able to work with people and make some deals for everybody. He would give, and there was always some give and take he was willing to do. And I didn't always agree with his giving, but he didn't know, he didn't know how they were going to respond. He didn't know the vitriol and the things that were going to happen with the media and all the stuff that was going to happen. So I think that this time around, he realizes that there's a lot of people he can't trust. There's a lot of people even on the Republican side that were not on his side. Now, the whole Lincoln Project thing was they had some commercials out there before the election. They put out some information that was worse than anything I've ever seen put out, even by the Democrats. They were making the guy out to be a Hitler. They were making the guy out to be, and this was the Lincoln Project, the supposedly the Republican establishment, the Never Trumpers, because they were so morally upright. Well, I got to tell you, they're not so morally upright now. I don't know what happened to all the money that they raised, but it's ridiculous. So that's gone away. Now, Mitch still controls a lot of the purse strings for major PAC groups. But I think he needs to be removed from all that stuff. And I think there's a lot of people who are on that pressure, putting that pressure on him. So we'll see what happens. I don't know. Like I said, it's going to be interesting to see how things unfold in the near future. But we have one thing we can guarantee you, though, and getting back to Rush, I'll conclude with this. The left has already started dancing on his grave. And I'm not going to even speak of the things that they're going to that they've already said and the things that they're going to say. I'm not even going to repeat it. I'm not going to give it any time. I'm only going to say that they're going to do it. Because you know that calling that out doesn't do any good. I would just remind you that Rush would never do that. The guy had class. And he wouldn't dare dance on someone's grave. A political foe who would fall would have his respect, not his vitriol, not his scorn. You wouldn't ever hear anybody say good riddance, or you wouldn't hear him say that to about anybody. That just isn't who Rush was. And yet they, the moral ones, the ones with the, who now supposedly have taken on the high ground, the woke ones, who are so morally much more morally mature than any of the rest of us. They will be the ones who will be dancing on his grave. So happy that he's gone. It's absolutely disgusting. That's all I'm going to say about it. It's petty. It's little. It's small, and the people who do it are petty and little and small. And that's all I'm going to say about that part of what's about to happen. Rush Limbaugh was a man who loved this country. He loved this nation. He loved the people in this nation. And all he wanted to do was educate them and help them to understand what the founders intended. And for that, he will be vilified by the left. So, with all of that said, I'm going to end this podcast not with music, but with silence. And I want to appreciate and thank you for listening to this podcast this evening. And I want to thank you for taking a moment to be silent and honoring Rush Limbaugh. In every way that he deserves. My prayers go out to his family, his brother, his wife, and all those who were around him, people who worked with him every day. He treated them like family, and they will tell you that. So, with that, I will leave this broadcast in awkward silence. Because it is an awkward moment in our nation's history when the man behind the golden microphone will not speak anymore.